The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this January 7th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a gorgeous day in the Auburn and Opelika area. Do you like that?
We had a mix of the two intros today.
Yeah, we're figuring it out. We're changing it up. New year, new me. You know what I'm saying? We're figuring things out.
Was that practiced or was that just you turned it on today?
No, that was kind of off the cusp. Yeah.
You do it again?
Nah, I can't. Done. Tune in for hour.
Wait for
two.
Tomorrow.
Nah, hour number two.
That's fair. It's usually doesn't have the same.
Nah, you never know. That's why you got to tune in every minute of every day on this radio station to see what's going to happen. And I can promise you, there will be a lot that happens on this radio station today, particularly in the next 2 hours while we are on the air, because, oh my goodness, there is so much going on. There is so much to talk about, and 2 hours is probably not enough today. But we are covering as much of it as we can. Two great guests are back on the air with us today as we are in our first Wednesday show of 2026. We have our man Jordan Hill of Dogs247 who will be joining us. We'll talk to him about Georgia football not playing in the college football playoff semifinals like most people predicted. We'll talk about that, plus what they are doing in the transfer portal so far. And also Georgia basketball, who off to a nice start in their 25-26 campaign, 1-1 in SEC play. So we'll talk about that and what they have coming up over the next several games. And then our man Double D, Daryl Dapperidge for Double D Wednesdays, will be joining us to start hour number two at 3:05. And I have been alerted that a Dap rant is on tap in hour number two. So you may want to be tuned in around 3:05.
Can I guess the sport?
Down. Yeah, he's really mad that gymnastics doesn't start tonight until Friday. Yeah, he's really mad about that. So, hey, speaking of gymnastics, head coach Jeff Graba will join us tomorrow on the show. So really excited for that to preview the season opener for Auburn Gymnastics against a top 25 NC State team. So that'll be tomorrow. But
we had him before the
preview meet. Yes. Yeah. That's been about three and a half weeks ago. So, and I have confirmation on that as well for gymnastics fans and families and things that are interested. We are going to have Coach Jeff Graba join us on the airwaves the week of every home meet this year.
Heck yeah.
So very excited for that for a young but talented gymnastics squad for head coach Jeff Graba. But more on that later. Okay, two great guests today. Jordan Hill of Dogs247, Daryl Dapperidge, Locked On Auburn, and The Barn at 3:05. We are going to talk about the mess that was basketball last night inside of Neville Arena. I'm very tired today, as I'm sure you are, and as everybody is who watched, listened, or went to the game last night, because we have some thoughts and several different opinions and perspectives on that debacle. Plus, the transfer portal is broken. Auburn picks up a couple of more guys, including Spectre. Are you out there? An offensive lineman through the transfer portal. We'll talk about him today. Talk with Daryl Dapperidge. And then a situation that just might fix it all because of how bad it is.
I was about to say, yeah, we've talked so much about the college football transfer portal and how broken it is and how We feel like with NIL and with the transfer portal, we've gone so far so quickly that there's no coming back. This might be the one situation that brings everything back to reality that quickly realizes, okay, maybe this is pretty messed up. And I'll give you a little bit of a hint. Lane Kiffin may be public enemy number one and the greatest villain in college football before he even coaches a game in Baton Rouge.
And yet, he won't care at all. So that's coming up in hour number two. Outside of our two great guests, up until 2:30 and then about 3:30, you can be a part of the show if you would like to. If you have thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports, we'd love to hear from you.
And we know you do.
Yeah, Auburn basketball, transfer portal, SEC basketball, college football playoffs, anything on your mind, we'd love to hear from you. The phone lines are open today, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, which is always open at 334-784-1067. And of course, we have to start today's show with what went down last night inside of Neville Arena, because it wasn't just a Steph Curry range three that went down. There was a lot of drama that went down as well. Auburn falls to Texas A&M in the second SEC game of the season. Tigers now 0-2 to start conference play under head coach Stephen Pearl, in a game that had ups, it had downs, it had runs, it had trends, and Auburn loses 90-88 in regulation. Christian, your initial thoughts on Auburn losing the game, how they played up to the point at the end, and then we'll get into the dramatics.
I was going to say, which way do we want to take this conversation?
We'll start slow and build.
We'll start with kind of just walking through the game.
Let's hold everybody's hand and let's slowly.
Basically, yeah, we're gonna build anticipation, and I have a feeling it might not make too many fans happy the way that we choose to talk about it.
Spectre just texted "lineman" in all caps.
There we go.
We'll get there, Spectre. I promise.
The first 4 minutes of the game were putrid. Was it four turnovers and a three from Keyshawn Hall that hit the backboard and barely the side of the rim?
Ugh, yeah.
Very, very, very bad start to where Tahad came in at the under 16 timeout, and we both sitting there watching this game said, "What do you think Steven is talking to Tahad about right now?" And both of us, I mean, the conversation was, "Tahad, look at what just happened in those first 4 minutes. Step on the floor and figure it out." And the team then slowly did begin to figure everything out. Again, didn't play great for the first 5 or 6 minutes, but man, was it 33-33 or 35 all with 3 minutes to play, and Auburn goes on a big-time run to lead by 10 at halftime? You felt like that was when the offense started flowing. You saw ball movement. You saw the ball touch both sides of the floor.
Wow.
Which, again, when you look at the team stats, it still amazes me that Auburn only had 11 assists, which is right at their average per game, which is a number that's scary within itself. You did hold A&M to 7 assists under their grand total, but yeah, you went to halftime, you were up 10, feeling pretty good about yourself. You started the second half on a big time run, and you got the lead up to 16, and about a quarter of Neville left.
And then it happened. Where A&M figured out a couple of things. They pressured Auburn. They blitzed Auburn. Tigers had no answer trying to inbound the basketball, get it up the floor, running offensive sets.
Which has been a frustration inbounding the basketball, especially this year, because it feels like there's two guys that just stand at half court and there's one in the backcourt. And it's just one on two, if not one on three, for Tahad Pettiford or whoever is bringing the ball up the floor.
Did you hear Steven address that last night in the postgame press
conference? Yeah, he talked about how there's two outlets, basically.
He basically admitted that wasn't a good set.
Yes.
And they probably should have gone away from that.
And you eventually, after, again, we have some crazy numbers that we set up and calculated while the game was in action, just some of the runs. But after some of the major runs, you did finally see them throw the ball to the three-point line, inbounding the basketball, just to be able to create a little bit of relief from the pressure because, yeah, you've seen it. When Tahad's having to dance out of two defenders trying to deny him the basketball and nobody is there to help him out. I mean, you see it in the half court, too, where it's just we're going to stand around the three-point line. No ball movement, no anything like that. It creates turnovers, and when you play a team like Texas A&M, Bucky McMillan said it himself in the postgame. He said a couple of things that we'll get to, but started it off by saying, yeah, a 16-point deficit for us really isn't that much because of how fast we play, because of how many threes we shoot. And when our team gets streaky, our team can score a lot of points in just a little bit of time. And it was a double-edged sword. You saw Texas A&M figure things out. You saw the couple shooters get hot. And you saw Auburn, as Stephen Pearl said, allow three turnovers to combine for 8 minutes of how this team played following that 11-0 run.
And that's a scary statement from a head coach for them to have that mentality of, oh, 16-point deficit on the road, doesn't matter, we're fine.
Yeah.
Easy to say in the winning post-game press conference. I'm doubting that was the mindset in the huddle at one point, right?
Sure.
But I do believe that Texas A&M is a gritty basketball team and one that will be a tough out every single night in SEC play, given how they did perform last night for 40 minutes, right? Not just 10, 15, 30, 38, 39. How they played for 40 minutes, they didn't give in. They didn't give up. They didn't fold. And I do believe that they have that mindset to a certain extent. But you let three of their starters go for double digits. Another one in Ryland Griffin, who had a quiet nine, believe it or not. You also let Pop Isaacs off the bench drop 21 on you.
And let everybody know about it, too.
And as he should. Went 4 of 8 from downtown. Ali Diba had 9 points as well off the bench for him. And it was just a combination that led to the avalanche in this second half. The stats we wrote down, starting at the 13:29 mark in the second half, that's when Auburn had its biggest lead. 13 minutes and 29 seconds to play in the basketball game. From that moment.
And for those that were at the game or were watching the game, that was when Auburn, again, slowly continued to bleed out A&M, missed three shots on the offensive end, but got the rebound every single time, and it was Elijah Freeman going to the line to shoot two when Stephen Pearl was at half court pumping up the entire arena. That was the 13:29 mark.
When he was asking the arena, you know, to get involved. 13 minutes and 29 seconds on the clock. Auburn is up by double digits. Over the next 7 minutes of the game, there was a 26-point swing. 7 minutes of action, 26-point swing from Auburn being up double digits to down double digits.
And in 5 of those minutes, it was a 27-5 Texas A&M run.
Including an 11-0 run by Texas A&M in a 30-second span.
That being the two inbound threes, the layup, the missed shot, and the and one.
Followed by a separate run by Texas A&M.
Just 2 minutes later.
Of 12-0 and 2 minutes and 19 seconds. That's when the pressure got to them. Auburn turned the ball over. They hit shots.
That is a combined 23-0 run. Two separate runs that combine for a 23-0 run in a combined 3 minutes.
You can't do that. That is a all-time collapse is not the word. I was racking my brain last night trying to figure out a word that described Auburn's falling apart in the second half.
Did you come to disintegration?
The word I came to was a disintegration. Auburn disintegrated, which means to fall apart in millions of pieces.
To become nothing.
Which is exactly what happened. Like, you remember doing paper mache back in elementary art school, trying to build it together, and you soaked the paper in the glue, water, crap, whatever it was, and you did it too much, and it just fell apart in your hands. It just went through your fingers and fell to the table, and you wiped it up and threw it away. That's what happened to Auburn basketball last night.
The video of the raccoons that bring cotton candy to go wash it off. And have you seen that?
What?
You haven't seen that?
No.
No, okay.
That's wild. What is your YouTube algorithm showing you?
But it's a very similar comparison.
I haven't seen that side of YouTube. I'll take your word for it. It sounds about right.
Fun fact, apparently raccoons have to wash everything before they eat it. So they take cotton candy and dip it in water, and it just disintegrates, and they get really sad.
I don't think I believe that. I don't think I believe that raccoons...
I'll show you over the break. Yeah.
No, no, no. I don't believe that raccoons wash everything that they eat. They eat garbage. They literally knock over trash cans and eat leftover food. There's no shot that that's real. Ask AI. We don't have an AI.
Okay, no,
they
don't wash everything to clean it, but when they can, they dunk things in water to enhance the extreme sensitivity from their paws.
Okay. So
half.
You were half right.
Sure.
I'll give you credit. It counts.
But I'll show you the videos when we go to break, and it's great radio.
Anyway, that's what happened to Auburn last night. You disintegrated on yourself in your own gym. To the point where you were down by 11 points with just a couple of minutes to go. So that happened. And I want to preface this by saying multiple things can be true from last night's game. Because
they are. How exhausting is that to be able to say? How many times have we had to come on here in the past year and a half or so, even 2 years, and say, man, multiple things can be right at the same time where something might not have gone your way. But it shouldn't have even needed to happen.
Correct. Step number one, truth number one, Auburn should not have blown a 16-point lead in the second half. I would say, you can't blow a big lead. Well, they did. You can't blow a lead like that if you want to win games in the SEC, not just last night's game, but any game moving forward. That's truth number one. Truth number two is good for Auburn for coming back from the 11-point deficit, grinding it out, managing the game somewhat well down the stretch compared to Texas A&M, who did not.
And Steven talked about that, too.
And having a chance to win it at the end.
Yeah.
Credit Auburn for that, because at the tail end of that disintegration that I'm talking about, that we all witnessed or heard or you know, whatever... You could have just said, well, that stinks. That hurts. Guess we're going to lose. Darn. But you didn't. You showed fight. It took some time, and it took a couple of gut punches to make it happen. But Auburn came back. And with some poor game management from Texas A&M on the early foul with 5 seconds out of the baseline or off the inbound, the... intentional missing of the free throw, which didn't make sense to either one of us. At that point, like, just make the free throw. There were 2 seconds left, and you were going to go up by three?
You would have gone up by three, and Auburn had used their final timeout prior to the second free throw. And Bucky was asked about that and said that you get a better look from a baseline inbounds rather than just from a rebound, which I... don't disagree with.
Right. But I didn't understand.
You set yourself up for what very easily did and possibly could have happened last night.
And so you miss the free throw, but you didn't hit the rim. It looked like it could have, looked like it didn't. And how crazy a foreshadowing was that? Where they stop the game, they review it. And Bucky McMillan was not happy about this, but Auburn gets a sideline out of bounds with 0.6 seconds. Stephen Pearl told us in the post-game press conference last night that he doesn't know where the 0.6 seconds came from, because if the ball didn't hit the rim, then no time should have come off the clock.
Especially like an inbound that doesn't hit a hand.
It's a dead ball. Yeah, it's a dead ball. And so there was that confusion where both head coaches were not happy with how it was handled. But it turns out that Auburn gets a sideline out of bounds across from the Texas A&M bench right in front of the broadcasting table with our friend Andy Burcham of the Auburn Sports Network. Texas A&M denies Todd Pettifer the basketball, as they should, as they did the entire second half. Auburn gives it to Keyshawn Murphy, rather. With 0.6 seconds, my man grabbed it, turned, and let it fly. And absolutely buried it. Didn't bank it in, didn't clank it in, didn't get a couple lucky rolls.
Barely moved the net.
It didn't even sniff the rim. Place goes nuts. team goes crazy. But there was one man who was not celebrating. It was Steven Pearl. I watched him. You and I did. Standing at the top of the media section watching. And Steven was not celebrating yet because he knew it was going to be reviewed. And it was. And they took, what, 5-6 minutes easily to review that? And what hurt about it was Auburn celebrated. They calmed down.
Watched it again.
Then they showed the replay on the Jumbotron, celebrated again, which Steven Pearl was not happy about because he didn't want them celebrating prematurely.
And he felt the same thing that the arena felt of, why is this taking so long?
And then it happened. The shot was waved off, said no good, and that was the ball game. But there was a whole lot more to come from it than just Auburn hitting a game-winning shot, celebrating a game-winning shot, and then being told that it didn't count. We continue this conversation on the other side. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. We're back to talk more from last night's heartbreaking loss for Auburn basketball right after this on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking Auburn basketball and the heartbreaker that was the Texas A&M game from last night inside of Neville Arena. And we are walking through together on how this all went down. And we left you with, at the break, Keyshawn Murphy hits the three. The team celebrates several times. Building is in pandemonium. And the official, after 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, however long, takes the headset off, turns around, gives the safe signal in baseball.
Waves it off.
But instead says, shot no good, ball game's over, A&M goes crazy, officials sprint off the floor, chased by Steven Pearl with an iPad and a
Pat
replay.
Pat Beverly style from the Celtics.
And that's it. And the reaction after that, Christian, was just insane, right? I won't go into full detail on what I saw from Steven Pearl and some of the administration and kind of what happened.
Not in a negative way.
No, not in a negative way. Just not relevant to this conversation.
No.
But what I can tell you is what the Auburn Sports Information Department told us as we're sitting in the media room waiting on Bucky McMillan and head coach Steven Pearl. Right, they come in and say, it's going to be a minute because Auburn is currently on the phone with the Southeastern Conference. And they are trying to work this out and figure out what the heck is going on and what can be done. So just sit tight. And we said, okay. We heard from Bucky McMillan. We heard from Steven Pearl. Both had choice words on certain events. Bucky, you said earlier, Christian has a swagger, right? Some confidence and believed in his team, and they won. And they should feel good about going on the road and beating that Auburn team last night because they played good enough to do so. And again, I think that's a talented A&M team. That's a tough out, is Texas A&M. But it's what Bucky McMillan said right at the end when asked about the situation when they went to review and they waved off the shot. And his choice of words, Christian, had all of us in the media shook when he walked out of that media room last night.
I mean, it was the, I don't know if this was a slip-up, but as soon as he walked out, we all sat there and talked with each other of, is that, did he just call it a makeup call? And everybody was like, I think that's what he said. He said, quote, I think the officials knew the situation. If it was close, it had to go our way based off of what had transpired the play before, referring to the free throws and how the stoppage occurred, allowing Auburn to now get that sideline out of bounds. Basically saying, if something were to happen at the end of the contest, based off of how the officiating crew handled the situation, Bucky McMillan and Texas A&M felt that if it was close enough, it needed to go their way. Rather than it being the right call, which whether it was or whether it wasn't is one thing, but the fact that that was the quote that came out of the opposing head coach's mouth in the postgame presser. And then, yeah, information came in, and we waited about 20, 25 minutes for Stephen Pearl, and eventually he came in and said, I'm sorry, I didn't want to keep y'all waiting for too long. I have to go back and make some phone calls when we get done with this game. What a wild situation. What a wild story. What a wild night that it was inside of Neville Arena.
Yeah, I mean, just a weird night, a weird evening, and one where Auburn was winning, then losing, then thought they hit a game winner for one of the more magical endings in that building, all to have it ripped away with not even little to no explanation. None.
Zero explanation, and the one thing that I will leave this conversation with is you hear all about this term in football, but you don't really hear about it in basketball. But it's got to be inconclusive. There has to be absolutely no doubt in anything to overturn the call, and the call on the floor was good. Good thing is that's the only time a buzzer beater's happened, right?
Yeah, good news is Auburn's never been hosed by officiating in athletics before. A team that shares that, maybe, I don't know, Georgia. We talk about them next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being along with us on a wild day on the show. So much happening around the world of Auburn athletics, around the SEC, and in college football as well. And excited to bring on our guest who, it's been a little bit since we've talked to him, but for the first time in 2026, we head over to Athens, Georgia with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Man, it's great to talk to you. We appreciate you taking the time and being back with us for another year, and hope you had a happy new year, my friend.
Absolutely. Had a great time. Hope the same for you guys. And it's real like y'all were just talking about. Not sure what all we're going to talk about. We got plenty to get on, but thank you guys, and happy to catch up.
Well, we will start on the football side because Georgia was, again, a team who had their sights set on a national title and had a team to do so, I believe, clearly the coach to do so as well with Kirby Smart. And they awaited the winner of Ole Miss and Tulane. And they got the Rebels in a rematch in the All-State Sugar Bowl, that game taking place on New Year's Day Eve, or New Year's Day that evening, rather. And Georgia, yet again, becomes the wrong part of the statistic of teams with a bye week in the college football playoff who are now 1-7 in the last 2 years. Problem is, Jordan, you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, Georgia's two of those seven losses because of last year and for this year. Tell us what happened, my friend.
Yeah, no, you're right that they are two of the seven losses there. And I think there's a couple things that really played into that 39-34 loss to Ole Miss. One, I think you really felt the loss of two guys that got hurt, center Drew Bobo and defensive end Gabe Harris. Drew Bobo, I thought in the second half against Ole Miss, the interior offensive line really struggled. And a key moment in the game, Georgia put the offense on the field on fourth down. They were trying to get Ole Miss to jump. They were not supposed to snap the ball. The center winds up snapping the ball, and it's kind of a fire drill, and Gunnar Stockton winds up getting sacked, and it gives Ole Miss a short field, which they take advantage of and score a touchdown a couple plays later. And then on the defensive side, Gabe Harris is absent. They really struggled to create pressure on Trinidad Chambliss, but more importantly, they really struggled to set the edge. Tijuana Lacy, especially early in that game, was able to get outside again and again, and it became really clear that Ole Miss was attacking where Gabe Harris had been. Some of the guys that played in his place, Joseph Jonah Ajanye, Elo Madozi, Chase Linton, they really went after him, and Kiwan had a really strong game, and I thought was more effective than he was when they played Georgia back on October 18th. Having said that, it was a game that was still up for grabs late. Georgia made it interesting and rallied back from a 10-point deficit. But toward the end of the game, I thought Georgia got a little too aggressive. You know, third and goal, they have a chance to really run the clock down and leave Ole Miss probably about 20 seconds if they run the clock down with no timeouts. Georgia winds up throwing to the end zone. Incompletion stops the clock. They kick a tying field goal, and that gives Ole Miss plenty of time to go down the field, which they do, and wind up kicking what was the go-ahead field goal. And then there was all kinds of craziness with the kick return that followed, and a safety and a free kick, all kinds of odd stuff. But in the end, I know Georgia fans are frustrated the second straight year that they have been bounced from the first round. There's a lot of frustration with coming up short, but it was a game where Trinidad Chambliss might have had his best game at Ole Miss, which is a high bar to hit, and Georgia loses by only 5. Should have only been 3, but you had the safety late. And close game, and Georgia just didn't make enough plays at the end to be able to advance.
It was a 21-12 lead for Georgia at halftime. Jordan, coming out of the half, Georgia goes 3 and out. Ole Miss then turns it over on downs, and then Georgia misses a field goal with Peyton Woodring, who you feel like has been one of the most dominant kickers in college football for quite some time. Did you feel any momentum shift at that point, or was there anything that Ole Miss did in the second half that they didn't do in the first half that really caught your eye early and maybe thought that the Dogs were in trouble from seeing early?
Yeah, I think the momentum definitely shifted there, and that was a sequence where you felt like Georgia missed out on some opportunities. And to me, it was a stark contrast to the SEC title game. You know, the offense didn't move the ball great in that game, but it was opportunistic. They block a punt, have a short field, score a touchdown. Baylen Everett intercepts a pass, has a nice return, gets moved back a little bit due to penalty, but Georgia scores a touchdown there. Early in the fourth quarter, might have been about midway through the fourth quarter, Alabama goes for it on its own 12, gets stopped. Georgia gets the ball and takes advantage, scores a touchdown. This game, they just could not take advantage of the mistakes, very few mistakes, but the mistakes Ole Miss did make, whether it was right before halftime, Ole Miss lets the clock run out when they could have kicked a field goal that would have made it a 6-point game. Georgia gets the ball to start the third quarter, and you think this is a golden opportunity. March down the field, if you're able to score a touchdown, I mean, that, you know, that's like a 16-point lead. That would be huge. Or even if you have to kick a field goal, they can't do either. They wind up, I believe that was a 3-and-out. And really, the opportunity that was missed, you get them stopped on a turnover on downs just on the Ole Miss side of the field, and you don't get anything out of it. Can't move the ball. And Peyton Woodring kind of surprisingly misses. It's a long field goal. It's a 55-yard field goal, but it was actually – short by a good bit. It really wasn't all that close. So, no, I thought that mattered, and you could especially feel it when Ole Miss really got into a rhythm. You know, I thought when Georgia had their own turnover on downs early in the fourth quarter, it just kind of felt like, oh, man, Georgia's running out of opportunities. So, those loomed large to me. They had opportunities, chances to make Ole Miss pay. They did not do that. Trinidad Chambliss was in a rhythm in that fourth quarter, and there were a few incompletions along the way, but I can tell you guys, not that many.
Well, so for Georgia now, Jordan, as Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us here on ESPN 106.7, where does Georgia go from here? We're going to talk about the portal in just a second, but just as a program, as a team, as a fan base, right? I mean, where does Georgia go from here besides next season and preparing to compete for another national championship? I mean, this has to be a disappointment, right, for Georgia to go one and done again in the college football playoff and losing to an SEC foe, right?
100%, and it's a situation where it's you know, duplicating what you did last year. You won the SEC, you then went to the Sugar Bowl, and then you lost. Now, I think the thing that makes it sting a little bit more, like you said, Jacob, is it's a team you beat in the regular season. At the same time, I don't know that there's much panic. You know, the fans are frustrated, but I think everyone within the program is you know, feeling okay about the future. I think that a lot of people, both within the program and the fan base, see 2026 as a real opportunity. You're going to have Gunnar Stockton back for his second season. Yeah, you're going to lose some big-time playmakers at receiver, and they're going to have to address that. But you're going to have some key pieces back on defense, Raylan Wilson being a big one, K.J. Bolden in that secondary, Elijah Griffin, who had a really good freshman year up on the defensive line. So I think next year is sort of, you know, a proving ground and an opportunity. I think if you do what you did this year, there will be a lot of people, you know, very vocally frustrated with where Georgia is. It was an opportunity that was missed. I think a lot of folks were already sort of penciling in Georgia to go to the semifinal to play Miami, and credit Ole Miss for the plays they made to beat Georgia in advance. I think there has been some self-reflection, but at the same time, I think there's a confidence within this program that, hey, you get to this point in the season and anything can happen. And they are disappointed with how it played out, but I think Georgia's sticking with what's got them here. Two SEC titles in the last 2 years, and I think they're looking for more of that going into 2026.
Jordan, is the number correct that I see right now on 24/7 of 10 outgoing transfers and then the one incoming transfer so far on the portal with Khalil Barnes from Clemson?
Yeah, that sounds right. You know, we could probably check, and then the time that I've been on this call, it might have changed one or two.
Right.
That sounds about right. The news, you know, so far, Khalil Barnes is the only addition they've had. He is a safety from Clemson, a three-year guy at Clemson who's from nearby Bogart, Georgia, played at North Oconee, which they've got a couple of guys. Kamari Brooks, who's a freshman that's coming to Georgia, and then Landon Roldan, if folks saw the Sugar Bowl, he was the guy who threw the fake punt that Lawson Lucky caught. So they've had a few guys from North Oconee. So he's a guy that's going to come in and going to fight for a starting safety job. Could also see him in the mix at star, depending on what they want to do at safety. And as far as the portal guys out, there's really not been a big surprise to this point. I'd say the most notable one was actually one that happened a couple hours ago. Janelle Aguero, who had been the starting star, got hurt late in the season, didn't play in the last two games. And Rayshon Dinkins played and played really well, Dinkins being a true freshman. So he was a guy that I thought, given the situation, given the emergence of Rayshon Dinkins, there was a real chance that Jonelle Aguero would transfer. That is a significant loss. He's a guy that was a two-year starter at the star position. But I do think Georgia feels good about Dinkins and his emergence, and they hope that he'll continue to grow and can settle in as that starting nickelback going into 2026.
Well, Jacob asked the question, Jordan, generically of where does Georgia go from here, but on the transfer portal side of things, where does Georgia go from here? I know that Kirby is somebody that prides himself on not having too many outgoing transfers, and he's made the quotes of, okay, well, if they do, those are the teams that we want to go schedule because they don't care about toughness. But from the incoming types of guys or from graduates, what are some spots that this Georgia team really looks to fill here in the next couple of weeks as the transfer portal is open for, what, 9 more days? And then you get some sprinkles of guys that are committing after that date.
Yeah, I think the two positions I'm really watching right now are wide receiver, which is a position that they've really relied on as far as the portal the last few years. And mentioning a few guys, Isaiah Canyon, a guy from Georgia Tech that they actually had on campus. I think that was yesterday. Sounds like things have gone well, so we'll keep an eye on that. He's a bigger-bodied receiver, a guy that could step in now that Colby Young and Noah Thomas are moving on. They've exhausted their eligibility, and they'll see if they can add another receiver. They were looking at Trey Richardson at Vanderbilt. He's got some other opportunities lined up, so I don't know that that's quite as sure a thing as probably Isaiah Canyon at this point. Then the other one, we're still kind of in wait-and-see mode with his offensive tackle, and the reason we're in wait-and-see mode is to see these draft decisions. Two big ones from the starters, Monroe Freeling and Ernest Green. If those guys decide that they're going to go, even if just one of those guys go, I think that Georgia has to go into the portal and add a starting caliber offensive tackle. They've already lost Bo Hewley, who was in the mix as a backup this past year. He entered the portal earlier this week. So those are the two to really watch. I could see them bolstering a few other positions like outside linebacker, running back if they can find the right guy. But the positions to really pay attention to right now are receiver and offensive tackle. And I also say they could add an additional safety or two along with Khalil Barnes.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us on ESPN 106.7. And before we get you out of here, I do want to talk a little basketball as well for Georgia after an impressive record in non-conference play, right? Just the one loss to Clemson by a bucket in overtime. But we knew that it was going to be a step up once SEC play hit. Of course, Georgia starts with a 1-0 record after beating Auburn last Saturday. Last night was a little different story, trailing Florida by just one at the half. half and couldn't keep up in that second half. What'd you see from the Dogs in their first road game of SEC play?
Yeah, it was a tough break and a big loss for Georgia. About halfway through the first half, Samto Cyril was ejected with a flagrant after taking a swing on a Florida player. And I mean, you don't want to lose any of your starters, but the one guy they could not afford to lose was their starting center. And Florida took advantage, really attacked the rim, was really doing a good job even before Samto left. But, I mean, they just could not keep up with Florida's size. I will give Georgia credit. You know, when they lost Samto, Florida went on like an 8-0 run, and you're watching it kind of going, man, this is really about to get out of hand. And they fought back at that point, you know, really made it close. Like you said, it was a one-point game at halftime. But eventually, as that game wore on, the loss of Cyril really, really stood out. And Florida got what they wanted with offensive rebounds, with second-chance opportunities. I think Florida had like 56 rebounds in that game, something like that. So it was a mistake that you hope Samto Cyril will learn from, because he cost his team dearly in that loss. On the whole, I thought they played okay, you know, especially in his absence. The start of the second half, they really struggled with turnovers. Just you could tell they were kind of pressing, trying to make something happen against a really dangerous Florida team. So, you know, not what they had in mind, but I think it's a good learning opportunity, not only for Samto, but for this whole team. Try to clean things up before they go to South Carolina on Saturday, a South Carolina team that was really on top of LSU. Tigers made it a little bit tighter in the second half, but very impressive road win for South Carolina to start SEC play. I think Georgia understands they cannot mess around on the road if they want to get to 2-1 in conference play.
I'm really impressed with this SEC schedule for Georgia. Impressed in the sense of it doesn't look all that daunting, Jordan. I mean, at South Carolina, home for Ole Miss, you get Arkansas at home, which Auburn plays this weekend, at Missouri, at Texas. I mean, that's a very favorable stretch, I feel like, for Georgia before a sprinkle of a ranked team in there. I think three are on the schedule as of right now, four if you count Arkansas as well. So not too bad in terms of scheduling for Georgia, but we know that can change on any given week.
Definitely. And I think the thing that sticks out to me, my mentality when you look at any SEC team, it's like protect the home court and try to steal a couple on the road. And you know, you look at a game like Arkansas, that's not going to be easy at home. Having to go to Texas could be a challenge, even with how Texas is playing. Got to be careful with Ole Miss coming into town, although they look like they've really struggled to start SEC play. So, you know, I think the mix of, you know, some of their harder games, I think, are at home. But to Georgia's credit, they've done a great job of defending the home court under Mike White. They'll bring their A game in some of those games. And we'll be interested to see this next slate, them going at South Carolina and then Ole Miss coming to town. That will be a big test for this team and see how they handle it.
He writes for Dogs 247 and joins us every Wednesday at 2:30 here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Jordan Hill, our man from Athens who covers the Dogs. And, man, we appreciate you, your time for all of last year, and looking forward to another great year this year with you being a big part of our show as well. Tell people where they can find you, especially keeping up with the transfer portal news going on at Dogs 247 right now.
Definitely, dogs247.com on Twitter, at Jordan Davis Hill on Twitter, at dogs247. Like you said, a lot of news from the portal, NFL draft decisions, and also if you're listening to this and you're an Auburn fan, go check out Auburn Undercover, because Nathan King, Jason Caldwell, Christian Clemente, all of those guys do such a great job, and they've got their pulse on everything going on with Alex Golish getting this thing started at Auburn. I'll shout out, too, my old buddy Justin Lee from the Opelika Auburn News just started his own Substack covering Auburn Olympic sports, the auburntorch.com, auburntorch.com. I think it's going to be a very fun endeavor there. And I know from working with Justin Lee, he does a fantastic job. I hope if you're in the Auburn area, subscribe to it. I think it's going to be a fun endeavor, and no one will cover those Olympic sports quite as well as Justin Lee.
Jordan, we appreciate it as always, my friend. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs 247. Go check it out. I'm telling you, they have it locked down on basketball, football, transfer portal, you name it. They got it at dogs247.com. We'll take a break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one, get into hour number two, where Dale Dapperich of Locked On Auburn in the Barn joins us. All that coming up on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Went long with him today, but it's been several weeks since we've talked to him and got to catch up on a ton of things for the Georgia Bulldogs, including losing in the college football playoff. How about that? We talked about that record of 1-7 of teams who had a first-round bye in the college football playoff, two of those losses being Georgia.
In the same
round
game and in the same stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Georgia's 0-2 in the Sugar Bowl.
That shows how hard it is. Coming off of a 21, 24, 28-day rest, whatever the calendar said it was.
I remember Ohio State said that they hadn't played in 28 days.
That's so – I mean, that's hard. Yeah. It is. It's hard. And if Kirby Smart hasn't been able to figure it out, that should show you how difficult it is. Kurt Cignetti's the only coach that's done it so far. But, again, I think that Indiana team's just kind of an anomaly. But talked about that, plus all the portal additions and subtractions this time next week. And then the following week, Georgia will have a lot more updates there. So we'll talk to Jordan about that, plus the Dogs in basketball as well. And speaking of basketball, we will begin the second hour of today's show with that, as our second guest is coming up, Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn. We'll talk to him about basketball, the transfer portal for Auburn football, new quarterback, new offensive lineman as well, and everything else on his mind. A possible Dap rant is on the way.
We might start with football just so that way, because we've already gotten most of our thoughts out for basketball, so it'll just be...
I'll let him start wherever he
wants. We'll let him go.
So that's coming up in hour number two. Plus, we're addressing the Demond Williams situation and hopefully giving some clarity on a situation between Demond Williams, the University of Washington, and Lane Kiffin? No way, right? All that coming up in hour number two. Stick around.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you joining us on the airwaves today as we get started in hour number two. And if you missed any of the first hour of today's show, we had a ton of fun, kind of. We talked about Auburn basketball and the situation is the clean way, the nice way that I'll say that happened last night inside of Neville Arena. We gave our thoughts on it, kind of broke it down from when Auburn had its biggest lead to basically everything else. The lead being blown, A&M going up by double digits, Auburn coming back, hitting the shot, having it waved off, the aftermath of that. I mean, there was a lot that happened there. So we talked about that in the first hour. Also had our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 on the phone lines to kick off the 2026 year, who covers Georgia Athletics and our insider who's with us every single week. And so talk to him about the Dogs losing in the college football playoff, plus the latest transfer portal updates and a little Georgia basketball coming off the loss to Florida last night. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, you could check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com in the podcast center.
Here in hour number two, I'm about to turn the mic back off and get onto the phone lines because we got our guy Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn joining us here in just a little bit to talk Auburn football transfer portal, to talk about the basketball, and we've teased that maybe a little bit of a Dap rant coming up for you here in just a little bit. We'll also talk about some of the biggest games in college basketball that happened last night, as there were some really, really good games, games that went down to the wire that probably shouldn't have, and just really good games in the SEC and in some of the other conferences as well. And then Jacob talked about it on the way out of hour number one, addressing and talking about the Damon Williams drama. And if you haven't heard a lot about it, we are going to dive into it. We're going to give you the whole entire scoop of, because Damon Williams signed, re-signed with Washington, and then entered the transfer portal because reportedly LSU was giving him more money. And so now Washington's planning on taking legal action. We're going to tell you all about everything coming up in that situation because, yeah, Lane Kiffin may be the college football villain before he even coaches a game for the LSU Tigers. All of that coming up here in hour number two.
Yeah, but we're about to get Daryl on the phone in just a couple of minutes. Daryl, of course, a big part of Locked On Auburn and the Barn as well. He joins us every Wednesday at 3:05, and so getting him on the phone lines as we speak, and then after that, the phone lines will be open. But if you want to be involved with the show until we're off the phone with Daryl and throughout the entire show, you can hit us up in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. That text box number, again, is 334-784-1067. And while Christian is getting Daryl on the phone, we know the basketball side of things, which we'll get to in just a moment, but did want to shout out some transfer portal news for Auburn, which I'm sure we will go over with Daryl in just a minute as well. But the first offensive lineman is now in the books for Auburn, as a P4 offensive lineman has committed to play for the Tigers. He is a, not necessarily a hometown kid, but he is an Alabama kid, as a Michigan State offensive tackle, Stanton Ramil, has committed to play for the Auburn Tigers. An offensive tackle, top 10 offensive tackle in the transfer portal, according to 247. And Stanton Ramil stands at 6'7", 312 pounds. Oh my God, that is incredible. 6'7", 312.
It's a big human.
I mean, that's, I described it earlier today. He's not even built like a refrigerator, Christian. He's built like a 18-wheeler standing up on its back, like just standing straight up in the air. That's what this guy is. He started in 2025, had significant snaps in 24. He redshirted in 23. And so that monstrous human being has 2 years of eligibility and comes to Auburn at the offensive tackle position via the transfer portal. And I'm sure we will talk about him coming up in just a moment, but I'm so excited to have our man Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn back with us in the year 2026. Daryl, happy holidays, happy new year to you, my friend. I think you were having a good new year until about 16 hours ago, is that right?
Yeah, sure. Definitely, there were some good sports things that happened. It's good to be back with you guys. Hope you had a happy holiday season and a happy new year. And then, yeah, that happened last night. I was a little bit under the weather, did not get over there to cover the game like I normally would be. Kind of just stay home to rest, to get better, just whatever, all this crud that's going around. And man, I think the basketball gods are glad that I wasn't over there.
What are you saying, Daryl? What are you trying to ensue there?
Here's what I've kind of surmised since having 12, 14 hours to kind of digest this, is I want that shot. I want the replays to show that he didn't get it off in time. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it would make all the Auburn Nation and all Auburn fans feel good, like they didn't get robbed, like they didn't get cheated.
Sure.
It's very possible that he didn't. I mean, I'm not going to be a homer. I'm just going to be honest. It's very possible that he didn't. It's very possible that he did. I don't think it's clear-cut or definitive one way or the other. There's different views. There's different angles. So,
and isn't that what builds the frustration?
Pardon me?
I was saying, isn't that what builds the frustration of not knowing one way or the other?
Well, it is. I think if the officials would not, you know, act like Beethoven and actually like they could hear something and speak and say something and come out after the game and say, this is why we called it no good. This view, this angle, show the ball still on his fingertips and the backboard clock, which is the official clock. That's the one you got to look at. If that's lit up red like a Christmas tree, no time. Do not pay attention to what was on the scoreboard clock or on the sides. That's not the official time. So if they would just come out and not act arrogant and like jerks and say something like that they are too important to comment on it. But my point is this, if it's that close that you cannot tell one way or the other, then it doesn't need to be overturned. So that's my contention. That's why I'm pretty upset about it, is because again, something that's that close, that's that inconclusive, goes against Auburn. And this crap started all the way back to 2019 with the double dribble. It keeps happening. And I am not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not a, fraud guy or whatever. It happens. Officials can be bought and paid for. They are human beings. They do make decisions based upon emotion. That don't ever tell me they don't, because I know they do, because I've spoken to directors, officials that said if they don't particularly like a coach and they have it in for them, they're gonna send a message with the way they call the game. Well, that's predetermined. So if someone is a human being and they have emotion and they're out to show a coach, what is there to say that they can't make a call for whatever reasons, inherent biases? I don't think that that's the case. In this scenario, I don't think it's premeditated. I don't think it's, like I said, a conspiracy theory or something like that, or fraud. But I do think that Auburn administration and Cohen and all the way up to the president's office, enough is enough. At some point, it quits being just by chance. It quits being a coincidence when you continually. One call cost Auburn a spot in the national title game. This year could have cost them the difference in making a bowl game and having a different season. You know, Oklahoma, Georgia. It continually happens. And then this happened. So if he didn't get it off in time, okay, I get it. But it sure looked like it. And it was called a basket on the court, it counted. So to take it off the board has to be inconclusive. Is there anything that you guys saw that said it was inconclusive without a doubt?
No, and that's the thing, is there's about 28 different angles, whether they're photos, videos, or somewhere in between, and none of them are conclusive. There's not one angle of the whole internet, of the thousands and thousands of people that contributed to this search, right? There's not one angle that shows whether he did or did not get it off. And I've gone back and watched the replay, the full just television broadcast replay. It's the, of where the shot took place, Daryl, the far side official, the one right in front of Stephen Pearl, when the shot goes up, his hand goes up to signal it's a three and that it's good if it goes. That was the signal, meaning it's good on the floor. The call was good on the floor. And then they go to the replay, and 7 minutes later, they say, no, it's no good. And you know how I know they weren't confident in that call? It's when they sprint off the floor. That's what tells me everything I need to know.
And if you're looking at it 7 minutes, you're not looking for a reason to uphold the call. You're looking for a reason to overturn the call.
That's exactly
and you hear
right.
all
that long.
And you hear all about it in college football, right? The clear and conclusive evidence, right? You have to have a clear determining factor to change anything. And despite what is so funny about social media, and you see everybody talk about it, it's clearly still in his hands, or it's clearly out. Obviously, that's not the case, which draws even more of that gray area, which you feel like builds more frustration whether or not the shot actually left his hand in time.
Yeah, and I don't know when Bucky McMillan became, you know, such a clown and such a classless jerk, the way he acted in the press conference, the way he acted on the plane. He's going to get his.
I was gonna ask if you saw the plane video.
Yeah, he's a clown. He's a clown, and you know, whatever. He was a clown. He did some clownish things at Samford that I hope come out eventually. But he's just, you know, that's not the way you carry yourself. I mean, that's just, and so again, Auburn laughing stock. Get some, you know, another team, another coach gets to celebrate at their expense, and Auburn just has to take it and say, "Sir, may I have another?" Well, and at some point, you would think that it would tip, that the scales would tip, and they haven't, and it keeps happening over and over. And when Terry McCulley came out and said, "If I'm the SEC officiating crew that gets Auburn's games, I don't show up. I protest those games. I don't do this. I don't do that." Do not tell me there wasn't an inherent bias, dislike, butt on their shoulders, pettiness of any crew that got Auburn after Ken Williamson got booted. It happened. And, you know, again, what are you going to do about it? You know, you stay on the phone with the SEC office. Did it matter? No. Bruce Pearl in 2019's in a room with, you know, three or four NCAA officials before he goes to the press conference, and they're trying to calm him down. And then what do? 2 years later, they give Auburn, you know, they accept Auburn's postseason ban when they should have been over backwards and said, "No, we screwed you enough 2 years ago." You know, and then what they did to Sharif Cooper after that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And again, I don't want to be that guy that makes it out like, "Oh," but I've watched sports and follow sports for a very, very long time. This kind of stuff usually evens itself out. You can live with it when you say good calls, bad calls, right? But it's not evening itself out. It's becoming way too lopsided, and somebody needs to have the stones to do something about it over at Auburn. Enough is enough, and something has to be done. And I don't know what it needs to be done, but I do believe that certain officials call games differently against coaches that they respect and fear and are intimidated by. And maybe it's time for Auburn to act like a bunch of classless clowns like other coaches do, so that officials don't think they can go into a place and get away with it, period.
Darryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn in the barn with us here on ESPN 106.7. And despite the scenario that played out last night inside of Neville Arena, Auburn's 0-2 in SEC play under head coach Stephen Pearl in his first year as the head man. And here comes a top 15 Arkansas team on Saturday afternoon. Darryl, your thoughts on the Tigers so far, what they have against Arkansas, and then we'll get some quick thoughts on football before we let you go.
Yeah, it's a must win. You can't go 0-3 in the conference. And it would just, especially you losing Jovic, it starts to slip away at that point. It starts to snowball. And next thing you know, you're looking up and you don't have a chance to win 9 or 10 games in the conference. And I think you need to do that to get an NCAA tournament bid. I think you need to win at least 9 games. And if you're 0-3, that's going to be very difficult. Auburn should be 2-0 right now. Make no mistake about it. If, buts, candy nuts, all that. You missed 17 layups against Georgia. You missed 12 free throws against Georgia and still go to overtime and you're up 5 with the ball in overtime. You should have won that game, closed that game out. You should have won that game last night, even without getting screwed on that call. You're up 16. And then within 2 minutes and 23 seconds, there's a 14-2 run. I mean, are you kidding me? So at some point, you know, we can talk all we want about this or that, or we got to do this or we got to do that. If you're Stephen Pearl and him talking about, you know, we still feel like we have a good team and all. Okay, enough talk. You're going to have to start winning some basketball games. And that starts with Saturday. You come back and win Saturday against Arkansas, you get a good feeling of a turnaround coming back. But you cannot afford to lose 2 games at Neville, which is supposed to be this daunting home court advantage in a row, and hope to survive the season. As far as if you're Auburn basketball, you've got to win Saturday. Must win.
Want to flip to football here very quickly, Darryl, as we approach a week into the transfer portal that opened last Friday. When we talk to you this time next week, we'll be just 2 days away from the portal officially closing. And then as the weeks go on, we'll be able to get some more in-depth thoughts from you on Auburn's entire portal class for football and head coach Alex Golish. But the migration has begun right from South Florida. Several players on both sides of the football there. Auburn, of course, picks up Byron Brown, their starting quarterback for next year, you would assume. And an offensive tackle today in the transfer portal. Your initial thoughts on what the Tigers have done in the portal so far?
Well, I like it so far. I mean, I think they got to obviously continue to fortify the lines of scrimmage. I think there'll be a couple more offensive tackles that'll be coming, and then you'll see some defensive tackles. I got word a couple days ago about this Ramil kid from Michigan State. You know, was their starter at the blindside tackle, and I think that's a good pickup. I think a couple of interior offensive linemen need to come Auburn's way, get a couple of the defensive tackles and an edge. I like the secondary. I like the linebacker. I think one more corner is important, one more starting lockdown corner. I think you're good at linebacker. I think you're good at running back. If Auburn didn't make another move at running back, I'm fine with the running back room. If it stays the way it is right now, I think Mapson's going to have a really good year next year. I have a really good feeling about him, which would have been and should have been his freshman year in college next year to go along with Cobb and Davenport, and if Henderson stays. So I like that. I still think Auburn's going to be looking to get a backup quarterback. I think you'll see an announcement on that the next couple of days to have another veteran quarterback in the room to back up Brown. And so if it's not Deuce Knight, if he doesn't, you know, this back and forth and this waffling and stuff, we'll see. But I think one more tight end too, guys. I'd really like to see a bona fide pass catching threat at tight end, a Rivaldo Fairweather kind of guy that can go down the middle of the field, split the hashes, get you some TDs in the red zone. Tight end room's deeper, but I still would like to see that dude that's the go-to guy. And I think some pieces are starting to come together. I think 10 days from now, we'll have a really good idea about how this roster shapes out, and I think it has the potential to be really, really revamped and really reshaped. And then, again, proof of concept, we'll see how that translates come next season.
Well, we're pumped to have a check-in with you next time and next week, Darryl, about what the portal has looked like and been like for Auburn in a week's time from now. Again, as we approach the end of the portal on January 16th, and I'm sure we'll have some more basketball things to talk about as well. Darryl Dapper, it's Locked On Auburn in the Barn. Plug it on, my friend. We appreciate you taking the time and being a part of our show yet again here at the start of 2026.
Oh, I love it. I miss talking to you guys. So Wednesdays and Fridays, I do my normal guest appearances on Locked On Auburn. After basketball games, I'll go live from the arena. And then Sunday nights at 8 p.m., we do a little barn cast. Me, Kyle Rush, Zach Blackerby, for about 40 minutes, we stay on and go live and just kind of recap the week previously in Auburn athletics. We had Brad Law jump on last Sunday. It was really great. The only problem was his mic was muted. So when he tries to make this grand entrance into the into the barn cast, he starts talking and cricket silence. So that was a little bit the effect was a little bit mute. But anyway, we really enjoyed it, and it's a good way to wrap up the week, the sports week on Sunday night.
Well, we appreciate it, Darryl. Does that mean you're going to be in Neville Arena Saturday afternoon for Arkansas?
I will be there. Awesome. With bells on.
Awesome. Can't wait, man. We appreciate you, Darryl. Have a great rest of your week, my friend. We'll see you on Saturday and talk to you again next Wednesday.
All right, guys. Take care.
Darryl Dapper, it's Locked On Auburn and the Barn, our Wednesday guest every single week, 3:05 right here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. No way that Brad Law was having technical difficulties. No. Not Brad. He's too good for that. He's too professional to have microphone issues. That's more of a Britt Bowen problem.
Ooh.
Not Brad, though.
What does Britt call Brad?
I don't think I have the green light
for
that.
I don't think we do. No.
Hey, speaking of Britt, he is on his way to Austin, Texas, where Auburn women's basketball takes on the Longhorns tomorrow evening. So a heavy road trip for the Tigers as they'll take on the Texas. Are they the Lady Longhorns? Do they call themselves that? I don't think they do.
I don't believe. I believe they are the Texas Longhorns.
The Texas Lady Longhorns. That's a mouthful. Anyway, Auburn women's basketball takes on Texas tomorrow night, which can be heard right here on ESPN 106.7. We're back after this. We'll talk Auburn and the transfer portal, the offensive tackle that signed today, some other names that Auburn is after as well, and then we get into the biggest story of the college football news today. All that coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
I don't like you anymore. That's my statement, and I'm sticking to it. Christian just showed me during the break, pretty much as we were coming back.
The video
back,
from hour number one of raccoons. No, I'm just kidding.
We never did get to that. Or is it because you couldn't find it because it was fake and you made it up? I think that's what it is. Where, in case you didn't know, we learned something earlier today that raccoons wash their food.
They like to dunk their food because of their sensitive paws or something.
It's something. I don't know. Christian said raccoons wash their food. I said that's BS. And turns out they kind of do, actually. So, remarkable stuff there. But no, Christian just showed me the Bucky McMillan video of the plane, because Daryl Dapprich, our wonderful guest who we just got off the phone with of Locked On Auburn in the Barn, be sure to check all that great work out with him and all those guys. But he brought up the video of Bucky on the plane during his very famous Dap rant, which was phenomenal. If you missed it, go back and check it out on the podcast later today at ESPNAU.com. But that's the first time I've seen that video of Bucky McMillan, head coach of Texas A&M basketball, on the plane ride home last night to College Station, where he had the audacity, to ask the fans to come to the arena on Saturday. I'm not mad about that. It's the don't be a millisecond late when you pack the read or whatever they say.
Don't be a millisecond late, because if you're a millisecond late, we now know
it doesn't count. Yeah. And even gave the hand signal of no good, no shot, and we move on. That's risque there, Bucky. That's cocky. That's what that is. I'll say this, and then we'll drop it and move on. Looks like we got a phone call we're going to get to on the way back as well. Take your win. Take your win and move on. Don't be that guy. You're new to the SEC. You're new here. Don't be that guy. You know you didn't earn that win. Oh, my God. Kristen just showed me the raccoon video. Oh, he's so sad. He's so sad. The cotton candy just disappears.
Disintegrated.
Yeah. Bucky McMillan to Auburn basketball in the water. Dunks it in and just disappears. All right, enough of that. We're back after this. Phone call to get to, plus diving into the Demond Williams saga.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, and I have learned that apparently a ton of people knew that raccoons washed their food before they ate it, but yep. The cotton candy video is hilarious. That is...
He called me crazy.
I did. You're right. I apologize. I was wrong about that. What's funnier, the cotton candy video or the Bucky McMillan video? I bet I know which one Auburn fans would answer. That Bucky McMillan video is wild to me. I had not seen that. Genuinely, I had not seen that until you showed it to me. And to have the you know what, to own it like that and act like you just walked in there and just beat Auburn's you know what, like, come on, man. Like, be better than that.
Again, that following the post-game press conference of him saying, we felt that if it went to a review, it was going to go our way based off of the previous things that had transpired.
Yeah, I've never seen more media members react the way that we reacted when he walked out of that room last night. Regardless, Auburn falls to Texas A&M. We move on to the phone lines, which are open right now, 334-321-1390. K-Bag, you're on the line. It's good to hear from you, my friend. I hope all is well.
Good Lord, Jacob. What an introduction, from raccoon grooming techniques to bucking. Good. I mean, I really appreciate you throwing this thing to me. Thank you.
Yeah, you know what you get with this radio show, my man.
What is going on today? What is going on?
It's wild, man. You know how it is.
The thing that I want to say is I haven't watched a ton of Auburn basketball this year, circumstances granted. I was in Neville Arena last night, and I did not see anything that resembled a team. There was, didn't see any cohesiveness, no really give a dang, nobody really congratulating one another. We did not crash the lane on defense, on offense. We did not really hit the boards. We're tipping the ball everywhere. We're playing a lot of ISO. I don't really understand what in the world's going on, but I'm not so sure if the five guys on the floor understand what's going on. My elementary thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a lot of people's assumption, or not even assumption, that's their evaluation of watching this team, because it comes off that way in everything that they do. It's not just one thing, but it's in everything that they do, and that's a real problem, K-Bag. It is, and I don't know if I chalk that up to team chemistry. I don't know if I chalk that up to just having an individual mindset, if it's coaching, if it's attitude. I don't know. I don't think it's only one thing, unfortunately. But I promise you, if the Tigers continue to go down the road they're going down, SEC play is going to be nasty, and Auburn could be finding itself on the outside of the NCAA tournament if they don't clean their act up.
Jacob, there's no question we're going to find ourselves on the outside of the NCAA tournament. Buddy, at the way we're trending and what I saw last night, this could be the biggest bust in the SEC NIL basketball era. No, I don't have a clue what we're paying, but what I saw on the court last night, man, that's awful.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's clear holes, right, in the roster without a true big man, and trying to play threes and fours as fours and fives, and who knows what the status of Phillip is, because he went out early and never came back last night, and you're not getting a ton of production at the guard position other than Tahad, and even that is hit or miss depending on the game. And so, yeah, there's some serious holes and issues right now for Auburn basketball, and it's worrisome because we're in January, a week into it, and you're flirting with the territory, K-Bag, of not being able to fix it in time to win some key basketball games.
Jacob, it has to be a drastic turnaround, and I want to ask you this question because I don't have the stat sheet in front of me, but I know we started the game off with at least four turnovers in a row.
Yeah.
And then we had that little stretch there at like the 12-minute mark where we had like five or six in a row. How many turnovers did we have last night?
I believe it was 12 or 13. I'm pulling up the official book right now. If my memory serves me well, it was 12 or 13, and then 7 or 8 of those was in the second half. Christian, do you have it?
Yeah, we had 13 turnovers, but yeah, you counted it with the 4 in the first 2 minutes of the game, and then you had 3, yeah, that led to that 11-0 run. So 7 of those turnovers are really the ones that stand out, but I feel like you could have told me it was more than 13, and I'd probably believe you.
But I tell you what, though, us making those shots at the charity stripe in the first half really kept us in there.
Yeah, Auburn,
which has been uncharacteristic of an Auburn basketball team the last year and a half, 2 years.
That too, and late game, right? You saw the struggles early, but when Keyshawn Hall goes to the line a couple times in the final minute, when you need those to basically keep the game a one-possession game, Auburn goes 23 of 31. The free throw line has been something that has been corrected, I would say. That's probably the biggest change so far from early on to where you're at now.
Yeah, it's the biggest improvement, but we have got to figure out how to work together. The motion and the rotations, I thought, were lacking there in the last 6 or 8 minutes of the ball game, which was pretty much absent the entire ball game. I understand everybody wants to shoot the three ball, and that's today's college basketball. But we've got to move and rotate, and even if we're undersized, let's get towards the rim and try and work that foul line. But I appreciate it, fellas. Y'all have a great day. War Eagle.
Yeah, same to you, K-Bag. Good to hear from you. It's been a long time, and hope everything is good for you and your circle. But, yeah, I mean, that's the moral of the story here, right, as we kind of put a bow on the basketball topic for now, is Auburn, at the end of the day, has nobody to blame but itself, has nobody to point the finger at except their reflection in the mirror. And what I said to K-Bag just now, it really hasn't hit me until looking at a calendar. Folks, it is January 7th. We're a week in to 2026, which crazy in itself. We're a week in to SEC play. You're getting to the point dangerously close. There's not an exact date or an exact target or line or whatever, but you're getting dangerously close to a point in the season where you're not going to change.
Yeah, so that conversation that you have where your identity is your identity.
You are who you are. Auburn is not there yet. I'm not saying that. They are not. I believe, because think about what Daryl said in our conversation with him. Auburn, as much as they're 0-2, very easily could be 2-0. If you hit shots and free throws against Georgia and didn't disintegrate, is the word I'm using, against Texas A&M last night, or if the call went your way.
Right, which goes to show you, not only from the Auburn standpoint, but it's a conversation that we've had a lot on the show here. We've had it a couple of times on after the game and just off air as well. You feel like this is a very similar spot that a lot of SEC teams are in right now, of coaches still trying to figure out what their team is going to look like. And Stephen Pearl still has a lot of optimism.
As he should.
And I don't believe that that's just the optimism when he stands in front of the microphone, because I truly believe that he does see more of the team from the standpoint of what we saw late first half to the 13:29 mark in the second half. I think he sees more of that, where the basketball looks good. The basketball is being moved around. There's ball movement. It's touching both sides of the floor. But there's just certain times and certain streaks throughout the game where it's, all right, we haven't hit a shot in three possessions. Here comes a step-in 28-footer in transition. Or here's a pass. Here's a pass back. Cross, tween, step back, and all of a sudden teams like Texas A&M, who want to get out in transition,
they feed
and average 22 assists a game. Texas A&M was begging Auburn to play in transition last night because they knew that there would be some wild shots. You saw the good, but you also saw the bad, and that's why A&M was perfectly fine being in a 3-on-4 or a 2-on-3 situation defensively, because they knew that Auburn wanted to stand around the three-point line, didn't necessarily care for the ball movement for 40 minutes, and ultimately ended up leading a comeback.
Auburn is now 0-2 in SEC play. They welcome in the 15th ranked team in the country, John Calipari's Arkansas Razorbacks, this Saturday, 5 o'clock, inside of Neville Arena. That game will be broadcasted on Wings 94.3. Tigers have lost 3 out of their last 4 games that they've played. They've also lost 4 games in a row to P5 opponents: Arizona, Purdue, Georgia, and Texas A&M. I want to take an early break and come back and have our final segment of the show, because I want to get in on what the biggest story of the day is by far, not just in college football, not just in college sports, in all of sports. And a moment that we described early on in kind of hinting at this topic and kind of previewing this topic and teasing this topic, it's an instance and a situation that's developing right now in Seattle, Washington, that could define the future of college football forever. And Pete Thame will just put an article out about that saying the exact same thing. We talk about that and wrap up the show right after this.
This is Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Took a little bit of an early break because we've teased this topic all day in the, I don't know, 7-8 minutes that we have right now. We're not even close to enough to truly dive into this. But we've had great conversations today, great guests on the show. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 in hour number one. Our guy Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn in the Barn in hour number two. Good phone calls, good text messages as well. So thank you, everybody, for another incredible show this afternoon. An ongoing situation that might just be the wildest we've seen in this new era of college football is the Damond Williams news out of Seattle, Washington. This news broke last night while we were sitting to wait on Auburn basketball to tip off. What, about 7:30, somewhere in there last night on this game to tip off inside of Neville Arena. And it was the news that Damond Williams intends to enter the transfer portal. And at the start, it was, oh my God, what a huge name. What a big name to enter the portal. That's crazy. How, that guy's super talented. He can go anywhere, right? That's wild. But nobody really caught the idea that it was intends to enter the portal.
Yeah.
Because
then it was, wait, wasn't there news like 3 days ago?
Wasn't there news like 3 days ago that he signed a new deal with the Washington Huskies? You would be correct. And that's why Damond Williams is not actually in the transfer portal. But he announced his plans to enter, with LSU being a front runner to land him as the next quarterback in Baton Rouge. The University of Washington said, no, 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 not so fast. You signed a contract. This situation has gone haywire. Here's what happened. In a nutshell, Washington's season ended. The University of Washington, the athletics department, the football program, all those parties, they came together with Damond Williams and his agency, and they agreed to a new deal. A one-year rev share agreement with the University of Washington worth around $4 million, which in itself is kind of crazy. A, that Damond Williams is making $4 million. He's a good quarterback. I don't think he's worth $4 million. But B, that the University of Washington is paying that, which shows anybody and everybody is willing to pay to compete. Right?
And total side note, but if you're enjoying this conversation, pay attention to the conversation we have tomorrow, because we have a list of college football players that are going to be making more than professional athletes at the MLB, NFL, and NBA level.
An example of that, just to tease that, is Brendan Sorsby's $5 million deal with the Texas Tech Red Raiders. He's making more money in 1 year in Lubbock than Shador Sanders is on his rookie contract for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, it'll be a very fun, probably eye-opening conversation tomorrow.
That's on tomorrow's show. But here's what's happening with Damond Williams. He signed a contract with Washington to return as their quarterback. He then said, actually, I think I want to enter the portal. Why? Because someone offered him more money. That team is believed to be LSU in Lane Kiffin. Why? Because Kiffin doesn't care and he'll do whatever he wants. But Washington said, no, no, not so fast. And Washington is fully planning on taking every matter they can of legal action. Whether that is make him fulfill his contract, pay out his contract, or just sue him to oblivion. You now have, if any of you took law classes or anything like that growing up, we did in our journalism degrees at Auburn, we now have Damond Williams. We have Williams versus the University of Washington. That's what we have.
And even more so, it's Damond Williams versus Washington, the Big Ten, and Washington is trying to get it to become, and the NCAA.
This could alter the future of college football. Pete Thamel just put an article out about it on ESPN about 5 minutes ago. I have not read it yet, but the headline says, what happens next with Damond Williams' case will speak volumes about the future of college football. A defining moment looms. I'm fascinated. Can't wait to read that article. But I encourage people to go check out Ross Dellinger right now on X. Okay, he works for Yahoo Sports. He contributes to On3. He's been around a long time. He does fantastic work as a journalist. And he put a pretty in-depth thread together earlier today, about 4 hours ago, updating what happened with Damon Williams. I'm going to read you bits and pieces of it because we're running out of time here. We'll talk more about this tomorrow and as the days go on and as this situation develops. It says Damon Williams signed a one-year rev share agreement with the University of Washington worth about $4 million. It's the same type of agreement that the Big Ten uses across all of its members, and it's built for situations just like this one. It says the agreement, A, prohibits a player from entering the portal once it's signed, which is why Washington is refusing to enter his name in the portal, because it's up to the school. They have to grant it and physically put your papers through. And B, it prohibits the player's NIL rights to be used by any other school, though the player can sign outside marketing agreements. Ross Dellinger goes on to say in this thread, coincidentally, the Big Ten commissioner just happens to be Mr. Tony Petitti himself, just happens to be in Seattle, Washington this week, who is now working directly with the university, and the Big Ten has claimed they are standing behind the University of Washington's approach of the contract.
As you would hope.
As you would hope that the conference would back its member.
Back a member,
not
an individual. Yeah.
It goes on to say that Washington officials are expected to communicate later today with Damon Williams' representatives regarding the situation and the next steps. Washington refusing to enter his name into the portal, he is not permitted to hold conversations with other programs. I'm sure that'll stop him, right? Washington says they suspect that Williams has already held conversations with other programs, and the school plans to submit any tampering evidence to the league and the NCAA. And that's where he says LSU is believed to be the school most interested in Williams. Now, those numbers started floating around, and it was more than $4 million. I don't think there's a concrete number out there.
We loosely heard the number six.
Could be more, could be less. But it was obviously enough for Damon Williams to say, yeah, peace out, Washington. Middle finger to you. I'm going to try and enter the portal and go somewhere else. Folks, I hope you see what the issue is here. I hope you see why this is a problem. And my God, if this is not the eye-opening event that college football needed, that college sports needed, if this is not the eye-opening scenario that makes everybody take a step back, because this situation is far from over. This is going to get nasty.
Yeah, and this has no true conversation from the standpoint of, oh, it's Lane Kiffin, or oh, it's LSU, or oh, it's Washington, or Damon Williams. This is a league-wide, not even sports-wide, but just taking a step back and looking at what everything is going on off the field.
And somebody stepping up and saying, we've got to put an end to this. I don't know what's going to happen here. From the things that I'm reading, it sounds like the University of Washington is going to win this in a big way.
Yeah, the University of Washington wants to say, basically are saying that we're the ones that control everything and we can name our price.
And I think that's the legal way. We're going to have to learn more on this, but wow. I mean, what a wild situation, a sad situation, because there's no way this ends cleanly. I know that for sure. And we'll talk more about it coming up on tomorrow's show. Plus, more fun portal news for Auburn football. We'll talk to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, get his thoughts on all things Auburn athletics. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. And guess what? We've got a college football playoff game tomorrow. We talk about that as well. 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.